Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to San Diego's once again Cop Watch Conference, San Diego. Woo! Who's watching here? Okay, so good morning, everybody. Thank you for attending. I just want to announce that the proceedings today are going to be videotaped and audio taped. So if you're in the closet, about your activism. We don't know. Okay, so thank you for attending San Diego's Sagan Pit Chapter Cop Watch Conference. This year has been an overwhelming time for civil and human rights activists in San Diego. Between San Diego's police and sheriff shooting to grand jury investigations and Minutemen madness, that shit is madness, my God. We've been extremely busy. Cop Watch San Diego is honored to host the conference and to present so many great organizers, activists, and survivors of police crimes. My goodness. Okay. Special thanks to Alma and the Hot Lucky Lab Cafe. Hey. Okay, for hosting this important and necessary event. Okay, so our first panel is on racial profiling of the poor and people of color. And we have some really fine people up here, people I want to be like, I sure do, to help us put this presentation on. But first I want to say something. I just have a little speech about racial profiling. Number one, racial profiling is not unique to the police. You can go all throughout this country and see racial profiling economically with housing, banks, and employment. It's not unique to police. But the fact that the police are allowed to harass, incarcerate, and brutalize people legally takes their racial profiling to a higher level. My goodness. Makes me want to holler. Okay. And the reason why racial profiling happens is because this country's foundation was built on racism. What can you do besides fight it? And as long as we have a U.S. society that's race-based, we're going to have racial profiling. What we can do is we can demand that police departments institute policies that help to curb this dehumanizing process. I was thinking, I looked up this morning on the web, 75% of all black men have been stopped because of their race in this country. That's not in San Diego. That's everywhere in this United States, 75%. That's pretty hefty. And I looked around to see what are other cities doing to curb racial profiling. Well, they're demanding that that there's mandatory reporting of race and reason for the police department's traffic stops. Well, we kind of have that. There's a number you can call. Most people don't use it. Video cameras and patrol cars that are sent to, especially to neighborhoods where there's been a lot of police brutality. They have videotapes in the cars, but what if you're getting your ass beat over here and not in the front? I mean, you're not on video. And then there's mandatory yearly anti-racist training. Well, what they have is diversity training. And I say down with diversity training, because what diversity means is we're different from them. It doesn't address racism at all. It just says everybody's different, I'm different, you're different, let's recognize differences. But it doesn't touch on racism at all. It never does that. And I think we need to have yearly anti-racist training for all cops, all of them. And also, they're saying that we need to take a stand and do comprehensive studies about the police departments that are racial profiling. Well, I mean, our police department's not ready for that, not yet, but we need to push for measures like this, because as long as we have racism in police departments, and as long as we have racism in police departments, we have police brutality. And I think it's over. Okay, so thank you for being here. We have, I have a list of four people. Are four people here?
You should have five.
Okay, the first is Mario Marino.
Actually, the first is Rocky, then
I'm sorry. Okay, so the first one's Rocky Neptune. This young man right here is director of San Diego Renters Union. He's a treasurer of Affordable Housing Coalition of San Diego County and a member of San Diego Foundations for Change. He's a former elected member of San Diego City Government, Mid-City Planning Board. He also served 2 years as the treasurer of that group. He's a freelance journalist, and he regularly contributes articles to Earth First. Journal and Wobbly National newspaper. The industrial worker is as well as local media. He's also the former editor of San Diego Streetlight.
I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Okay. He's presently finishing a book in San Diego, and in 2008 he plans to run for city council. I'm voting for him. All right. Okay, and then that's it?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Just go ahead?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Well, thank you for this opportunity to participate in this important conference. I think others will kind of wander in as the day progresses. And I think a lot of people, too, just don't come because they don't think there's much we can do about police abuse in our neighborhood. Let's prove them wrong. Let's learn some things today, and the next time we have a conference like this, let's say, hey, these folks have got their act together, and they know how to confront racism and class cleansing in our community. A friend of mine asked me, well, why did they ask you to vote? I mean, participate in that conference? You're not an intellectual, you just talk a lot. And I said, well, it's probably because in all of Southern California, there's only one county jail I haven't been locked in. Now, in my book, I create an axis of inquiry between certain life experiences, corporate dominance, and local culture. And I'd like to explore some of those themes today and how they relate to police abuse. Others today will no doubt focus on who, what, where, and when. I would like to look at why. And if you could bear with me, I know a lot of you know the history of the economics of the poor. But I'm trying to articulate this for myself, so when I talk to community and neighborhood groups, it makes sense to them as well as you. Today, I'd like to talk about the greatest threat facing us all, and that is the specter of the militarization of everyday life and the developed personalities that either support or acquiesce in this expanding culture of submission. Now, as the stepson of a former San Bernardino County Sheriff's deputy, cruel to the core, I know a little about arbitrary and illegitimate authority and its abuse and use as a weapon against the poor. From running away from home at 16, living on the streets of New York City, to the hollows of the Appalachian Mountains, where I worked as a VISTA volunteer in the 1960s, to Albufeira, Portugal in the 70s, where I was imprisoned for working against the fascist government of Salazar, to today in my work on behalf of struggling renters and the homeless, I have seen, felt, and experienced America's continuing war against the homeless and the poor. Now, nothing reflects a nation's priorities better than a look at how it uses its military forces. And that's true of a city or county as well. Nationally, with the fall of the Soviet Union, U.S. foreign policy and militarism no longer in competition for the hearts and minds of the masses shed its human face. Today, our government, owned by powerful corporate interests, religious fanatics, and neocon fascists, uses its young troops to consolidate the power of the wealthy and guarantee their expanded control over the Earth's rapidly shrinking resources of fuel, water, food, even existence itself in a future globally hot environment with increased natural disasters, pandemic diseases, and starvation. Those who control the wealth, the political power, and the media have begun what Subcomandante Marcos calls the Fourth World War. It is an invasion of every country, every village, every home by the owners of capital to codify, patent, seize, hoard, and create scarcity of every acre of land, animal, organism, local economic system, costume, cultural works, ecosystems, and even words and ideas. As the world's resources shrink, those in power seek to get all the little bathtub rubber duckies in a row. to create forever through a legal system backed by military force a new empire. The dominance of private property over community needs. The selfish interests of speculators and developers over solidarity in our neighborhoods. And the supremacy of the greed-driven slavery of the corporate-owned market system over the future of our children. Those who benefit from a corporate-owned world know full well that that paradigm can only be built and protected in a majority world of working-class folks and the poor by force. Today it's no longer Castro against Goliath. As more nations resist, particularly in South America, our war machine is expanded. Afghanistan and Iraq are but the training grounds. The process of dividing the world's resources among a few for profit depends on a certain mindset in the general population, among us. Those in power seek to develop a new character trait among us based on fear. Fear of terrorists, fear of losing our job, fear of losing our home or possessions, fear of being an outcast or oddity, fear of being arrested, fear of the foreigner, fear of growing old, fear that someone else may be having more fun, more sex, or have better toys to play with, always looking at our reflection in the glass at the mall, wondering what others think of us, or how we should want others to think of us, or how we should think so that others will think good of us. Those of us who are older know we have lost our way. Those who are younger are struggling for a new path. Now I bring this attack upon the world by the United Corporate-Owned States of America and its mindset that allows it to this discussion, this conference, on increasing police power and abuse in our neighborhoods, because empire and militarism is a double-edged sword. A society that allows torture and abuse in its prisons, such as Abu Ghraib or Guantanamo, will overlook violence and abuse on its city streets. A community that allows the slaughter of innocents in an illegal war to gain oil profits will turn a blind eye to police murders and assassinations in our own neighborhoods, especially if there are people of color, young folks, or the homeless. Now, there's not much you can do about war and U.S. imperialism on the macro level. All three branches of government are controlled by powerful corporations. But here, on the local level, we can fight the mindset, resist developing the character traits for empire building, and hope like that stone thrown into a pond, the ripples go far. Here in the trenches, in the war for justice and equality, in the battle for fairness and compassion, we must demand that city and county government create laws and ordinances for all the people, rich and poor alike. When we allow some to fence off public spaces to allow gated communities, we create the model for a gated city and a gated heart, as well as the mindset, the theoretical justification for the second great enclosure movement worldwide of corporate-owned neoliberalism. When we allow developers, speculators, and landlords to increasingly gouge working folks, charging obscene rents, pricing homes out of the reach of our children, who will be forced to move, tearing down affordable rental units to build upscale half-million-dollar condos, then government takes the side of profiteers over the needs of the community. And when the military forces of a city, its police department, is used to persecute, harass, beat, and arrest the poor so that others may maintain a certain ambiance for profit, then that police force becomes illegitimate. A public force used for a private nature, punishing those who do not participate in the system. What empire demands is an armed group of people whose job is to protect the wealth of the elite, and almost as importantly, to protect those who serve the interests of the elite, the worthy class, and punish those who are too fragile to participate in the system, and those few of us here today who actually have a spiritual or social conscience and voluntarily opt out of empire building based on our courage, human solidarity, and compassion. My friends, I have served in city government, and I'm here to tell you something you already know. We have a dysfunctional council, and the city bureaucracy is owned by powerful downtown speculators and developers. This city and its even uglier racist counterpart, the county, reflects the dynamics of domination rooted in the corporate-owned market system controlling the armed forces of the United States today. This system, no longer built on local laissez-faire competition, community sharing, and mutual benefit, is increasingly based on fear and violence. Our local armed forces, the police and the sheriff's department, reflect the local manifestations of globalization, particularly gentrification, a city of the rich and for the rich. The assassination of William Miller, a homeless person in Ocean Beach, had nothing to do with a private crime carrying a stick. It was his social crime of living outside the corporate-dominated perimeters. This horrific, unjustifiable slaying is but a glimpse at the underbelly of San Diego's jihad against the homeless. The other slayings, deaths, beatings, harassments, and persecutions, all in the name of profit. The social crime of being poor is intensified when that person dissents, talks back, shows independence, or a lack of fear. From Kent State to Jacob Faust, young rebels are targets. From the massacre of the Black Panthers to over a million young people of color in our nation's economic concentration camps, the forces of greed and fear continue to attack all who stand in the way of a corporate-owned world. Now, I have looked into the eyes of San Diego Police Chief William Lansdowne during an interview and saw the cruel determination of a General Westmoreland or a Tommy Franks. It is our local army, charged with class cleansing and corporate thought speak. Finally, let each of us today participate in this conference. Learn new ways of slam-hammering the system and its martial forces, and dedicate our lives to freeing our children and their children from the approaching cold, empty world of a police state. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rocky, for your presentation. And next up is Ms. Gloria Verdue. Gloria's a part of the International Action Center. She's also an organizer with the IAC and Troops Out Now Coalition. And she just actually returned from the Millions More movement.
It's kind of strange sitting up here in front of everybody, which I agree with Rocky. I'm not like a big intellectual just like you. We're all, you know, we're all in this together. We're all just, you know, talking to each other. But I would like to thank the Saigon Pen Cop Watch. I think that the flyer said Saigon Pen, California Coalition for Women Prisoners, the Coalition Against Police Brutality. Because I know that we're all a part of all these different grassroots groups here to, you know, to fight this whole system that's attacking the poor and working class people. Now, we all know that poor people, people living below the poverty level in the richest country. I'm going to have to put my glasses on. We all know that the poor people, people living below the poverty level in this, the richest country on the planet, are overwhelmingly people of color. And we all know that the poor in this country are workers. We work the hardest and we bring home the least. To deal with the rising cost of living, we work more hours. Some of us have two and three jobs. We work overtime if we are fortunate to have that, if we're fortunate to have that option. In return for our whole work, our hard work, we pay more taxes, federal, state, payroll tax, and we have more deductions. Medical health care deductions, Social Security, pensions, health care, and with all that we pay into the state, we have a government who did not respond and answer to the critical needs of our people. Sisters and brothers, the whole world watched. Rapper Kanye West put it lightly when he said that Bush does not care about black people. Katrina showed that this government, corporate America, does not care about poor and working class people. That statement that Kanye made, sisters and brothers, is putting it lightly. To show you exactly what we are dealing with, in the year 2000, 63% of all companies in the U.S. reported that they paid no corporate income tax from the years of 1996 through 2000 on revenues totaling $2.5 trillion.
Wow.
Trillion. And we are to believe that this government cannot afford to build affordable housing, universal medical care, education, jobs for the survivors of Katrina, Rita, and practically for all working and poor people in this nation. Now, I'm just returning from the Millions More movement, the 10th anniversary of the Million Man March. This year, this is also the one-year anniversary of the Million Worker March movement. The Million Worker movement was one of the co-conveners of the Million More movement. The key to this historical event is unity. We must build bridges. We must put aside our differences and come together and work on solutions. At this movement, speaker after speaker addressed the issues of poverty, racism, and war, issues of police brutality, housing, health care, the criminal justice system, jobs, and just basically caring for our communities. I have to report that there was a taped message from Ricardo Alarcón from Cuba. He showed us our solidarity with the poor and the survivors of Katrina and Rita. And he also reiterated that Cuba has waiting 1,500 doctors to be sent here, of which the U.S. government refused to let them enter. You know, we have to address this. Why? Also, Minister Farrakhan addressed the issue of Cuba having scholarships for marginal students here in the U.S., free medical scholarships. But Farrakhan also addressed the issue of Venezuela and their support for the poor here and supplying oil and energy for marginal communities here. But the biggest message that came from the hundreds of thousands of people that were there in Washington, D.C. is, what do we do next? What do we do when we go back home? What do we do when disaster strikes us in our community? What do we do if there were an earthquake right here? Sisters and brothers, I know that everyone is angry about what happened with Katrina. When will we have unity? When will we have unity in the movement? We are moving towards unity. You know, meetings like this shows we're moving towards unity. We will have unity, brothers and sisters, when millions of people, like you and I, millions of people, come out and demonstrate against racism, against poverty, against war. We will have unity when millions of people stand side by side with the survivors of Katrina, New Orleans, and the Gulf Coast. This is the direction that we have to move in. Unity is very difficult, but it's something that we need. Right now, I'm going to remind you of something that's coming up, a very, very important anniversary. This year will mark the 50th anniversary of the day that a sister by the name of Rosa Parks, a garment worker, a civil rights activist in Montgomery, Alabama, refused to give up her seat to a white man. This was against the law. She was arrested. Her act of defiance sparked what we call the Montgomery boycott. We can't go into a whole history lesson on what happened at this time today. Of course we will, but not today. But I'm sure most of you in this room, you know the events of what came up to this Montgomery bus boycott. Those of you who don't know about it should find out, because this boycott lasted longer than a year. And it involved 40,000 African Americans, workers, and supporters from communities throughout Alabama and Montgomery. And this was a struggle that launched the modern civil rights movement. It would have been no 1963 march in Washington. It would have been no freedom rides if it wouldn't have been for the Montgomery bus boycott that was started by Rosa Parks. It also introduced to the world a young minister by the name of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who became the national spokesperson for this movement. Now, what can we do to commemorate December 1st, 1955, as December 1st, 2005 is coming up? Well, what we want to do is we want to have a nationwide strike. A nationwide strike against poverty, the poor, against racism, war. And we want to do this to honor what Rosa Parks did. We owe it to the victims of Katrina. We owe it to the poor. We owe it to the working people. We owe it to the world. We owe it to ourselves to find a way to turn the outrage over Katrina into a mass grassroots movement for social justice. We gave out these flyers, not this exact flyer, but similar flyers in Washington, D.C. And there was an overwhelming response. I mean, educators, I mean, mothers and parents said, give me a few more of these so I can talk to my kids about it, because these things are left out in the history lessons. We know that this is going to be a nationwide, movements are going to go on cities nationwide, but what are we going to do in San Diego? That's the question. What is San Diego going to do? Well, what we want to do, we want students to organize walkouts at their school. No school on December 1st. We want workers to say no work on December 1st. No shopping on December 1st. We know this is hard. This is hard, especially here in San Diego with the cost of living, with rent prices, with medical care. All this is really hard. But maybe you can get a comp day, a vacation day, a sick day. And what do you do when you take off? Maybe you can sponsor a school. Maybe you can go and talk at a school, at a college. Maybe you can do something like that. Maybe you can show the solidarity to our youth that are walking out of school. We have some time to organize for this, but this is something we really have to do. We really have to ante up. We have to do more within our communities to really make this government. We have to make the government do something. They're not going to do it. They're not going to do it on their own. It's up to us to take the streets to do this. In San Diego, we reserved the Malcolm X Library for December 3rd, and that's a Saturday, where we're going to have discussions. We're going to have people coming out into the communities. We want all the groups to endorse this. We're going to look more about how we can, get something started. We want to have a teach-in. And also there, we're going to show the movie The Rosa Parks Story. Before that, we're going to organize on Euclid and Imperial. I think a lot of people that were here, doing the Democratic National Convention and doing a lot of the demonstrations we have for Mumia Abu-Jamal and political prisoners, we organized there on the corner of Euclid and Imperial, right there. And we're going to rally right there and march to Malcolm X Library. These things that I'm saying, they can't happen without us organizing for them to happen. The people are the ones that makes these things happen. After that, we're going to march to Malcolm X Library, have a teaching. Some of the issues that we want to discuss here are the people of New Orleans and the Gulf have to be in control of the rebuilding of New Orleans. We have to discuss living wages. We have to discuss an independent investigation of what happened in the Gulf, the levees, the slow response. We have to discuss bringing our troops home now. We have to discuss health care, housing, education, you know, money for education and not war. All these issues are up to us to bring up. We're working on a flyer. This is a preliminary flyer, and I'd like everybody to pick up one. And also, for people who want to know about more about what happened in D.C., we don't know. To me, I was there. It was a sea of people. To me, it was millions. But if you look at this picture, and this is a picture that I took, it was this, you, like the camera lens could not get all the people that were there. I think it was a huge success. And it had a different feeling. It was more of an international movement. And this paper here is available there at the table. There's books available. There's papers with articles. But we need to support each other. And the word for today is unity, working together. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Gloria, for that presentation. Next up is Mario Marino. Okay, he's from the Coalition for La Justicia. Am I saying that right?
Justicia Posibilidad.
Okay, he's a volunteer. He volunteers to help this world from all the harm we've inflicted on ourselves. Say that.
Thank you, sister. I'd like to thank all of you, especially Janice Jordan, for inviting us here and giving us this opportunity to, inform the community. As we all know, the police brutality and abuses that we have all seen this year and the previous. I don't know how far we take it back, but I guess ever since police got formed. We're here to inform of what's the events, the atrocities that have been going on in Vista, the city of Vista and North County especially. From the beginning of this year to today, there has been a total of 5 deaths at the hands of the San Diego sheriffs working in Vista. Again, these have all been young Latino males in their 20s, and I will briefly just go through the names and dates of each of the incidents. On March 7th, the sheriffs killed Jose Antonio Mendoza at the age of 24. He was unarmed, and they just cold-bloodedly killed him. On May 15, Roman Torres, 24, got killed with AR-15 rifles. He allegedly had a gun in his possession and, again, allegedly pointed it at the officers. This was the one and only incident where there was a gun involved with the, quote, suspect. On July 28th, Sergio Garcia Vasquez, age of 25, was killed. He was a suspect in a robbery. But I think all people of color and minorities and working class people fit that certain description of usual suspects. He was shot and killed. July 29th, Jorge Ramirez, age 31, was killed, and this I think stands out of all of them because this individual, okay, he needed psychological assistance, and that's why he had called the police to help him with this psychological distress, and this is the kind of help that we get from police and the sheriffs and law enforcement and the government. So his help was, I guess, let's put him out of his misery and end this for him right here, right now. On August 2nd, Jesus Eduardo Manso, 23, was shot and killed. He was a suspect in a car burglary, or GTA, I believe. And there was a foot chase, and same old story, typical story. He was reaching for something that officers thought was a loaded gun, and they didn't find anything on him except for a tool in his clothing, which he didn't even take out, and they shot him and killed him. These last three incidents raised a lot of red flags because they did not happen in separate cities. They happened all in one city, and within the time frame of 5 days, July 28th, July 29th, and August 2nd. And you know, again, it's unfortunate that most of the community does not see this as something unusual. You know, they just see, they trust police as, you know, they're the good guys and they're here to protect and they're here to take out the bad guys, you know. And as long as there's that blind trust in police that, you know, they are law-abiding citizens and that they will do no wrong, that they cannot do anything wrong because they're trained to do their job and they're here to protect everybody without prejudice or, you know, without any difference. As long as the majority of society has this blind trust in police and government and law enforcement agents, these kind of atrocities will continue to happen. And as long as the community does not do anything to organize, even if there is one killing, you know, again, this will continue to happen. So after all this, the community saw a need to organize and respond to all this and say basta, you know, enough of all this, enough of the abuse, enough of the killing. So after that, several organizations, along with the community of Vista, organized ourselves and started responding to all this. Because if we do not stand up and fight for the people that cannot speak for themselves, such as Brother Mumia, you know, the voice of the voiceless, you know, we have to denounce this. You know, it does not only affect the Latino community or the Black community or the Asian community, white community, it affects us all. Because as long as we let this cancer grow, it will continue to bring upon all the situations that our kids will find themselves in the future. So we need to work towards a solution, if not today or tomorrow, in the next month, in the next year, in the next 5 years, however long it takes, we will be here. And as long as there's a single one of us speaking out against all this, then we are succeeding in our struggle because we are not staying quiet and letting this happen without a response. So thank you all for having us. One of our members of the coalition will speak briefly on this, on how we've been organizing around and what events we've been doing and what we have going on today as a response, and in the next couple of weeks and the next couple of months to continue this work. Thank you. Gracias.
Thank you, Mario, for speaking the truth. It's really weird because I hear that sentiment all the time, that police are just here to protect us. And every time I ask the people that say that, I ask them, where do you live? I mean, they live in Encinitas, Carlsbad. I mean, they live in places where they don't have to worry about it. So thank you for spreading the truth once again. Next up is Ms. Tina Jillian. She's with the California, Coalition for Peace, Justice, and Dignity. She's also a mother of two and is a resident of Vista. So please welcome Ms. Tina.
Good morning, and thank you. I have stated I admire all of your passion it just, it overwhelms me, because when I grow up, I want to be like y'all, because it's fantastic. I just recently moved to Vista, and I was, I moved there in April, and I started to see and hear and read about all the injustices that the police would inflict on the Latino community there. And I think I lived in a box before, and I never really saw it because it didn't affect me. But three Latino men were shot down in the streets of Vista by the San Diego sheriff's deputies without a reason or cause.
And the city officials held a forum in the community, invited the community to, I think what they wanted to do was some, you know, putting out some fires, a little bit of PR, and let's let them know we care. And the meeting was frustrating and annoying, because really they didn't answer any questions, they didn't address any issues. And but I don't think that what has occurred from that gathering, I don't think that the city officials expected that the community would become one in unity, one in mind, to reform the community, to blast out and make public the atrocities and the abuses of the San Diego sheriff's deputies in our community. We gathered the community together with the help of other various community groups that are already formed. They came into our community and they assisted us in forming the Coalition for Justice, Peace, and Dignity. We have since gathered the community, we asked them what they wanted, what they expected, what their demands were, and we wrote them all down, put them in a letter form, and we went and we presented it in person to the Vista mayor, the sheriff's deputies, and the city council. They have then responded to us, you know, in their yes, no matter, not really committing to anything. But what has occurred from this is that the community has united in one voice. And our voices are being heard, because we are no longer going to stand by and allow anyone of any color, because of their class, because of their education level, any of those things are not going to allow the police to abuse the young people in our community or the old people. Anyone that is being abused by the police department, who are hired to protect and to serve us, that is not going to continue, at least not in Vista. And the people in the coalition are dedicated to advising the individuals in our community on how to formalize complaints to the sheriff's deputies about them. We are educating them in their rights. They don't have to be afraid to speak up. They don't have to walk in fear of retaliation from the police department. We are having a march today where we're going to march from one area to another, and we are just going to let the community know that the Coalition for Justice, Peace, and Dignity is here for the long haul. We are not going anywhere. We will continue to press on until our demands are met by the city officials and that they understand that this is no longer going to be tolerated, that we are not going to idly stand by and allow the abuses to continue. Not in our community and not in anywhere else where there are these things occurring. It's time for the people to stand up, discuss it, talk about it, get it out in the open. Say it's over now. Let's just move on and let justice reign. We have constitutional rights that protect us. And so many people in Vista, they are poor. They are, a lot of them are illegal immigrants. That's what they call them. But they're afraid of the police. They walk in fear every day. And we want to quell their fears, and we want to let them know that we are here. I'm not an activist. I've never done anything except, you know, probably not buy grapes or something. But I'm telling you that there's a passion in me that the community is all in unity and we all feel the same way. And we're not going to stand by and be quiet anymore. So I just want to thank you all for letting us come here and tell you what we're doing in Vista. We're just doing everything we can to disrupt the powers that be, so we can make change and bring change. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tina. You know, first of all, you are elected. Are you kidding? Nominated for one of the year. One thing that we keep reiterating over here is that police brutality is nationwide. It's worldwide. I think we've established that. And up until a couple of years ago, I didn't understand that the whole public understood that. And I watched the Good Morning America segment, and it said, what to do if you're stopped by the cops? And they went through this whole list of things, you know, don't act too nervous, don't reach for anything. And I was just dumbfounded because it came to me that we recognize police brutality. It's like the Good Morning America. But we're not saying, you know, why don't we hold the police accountable? We're saying do what you can not to get shot. That's a pile of crap. Next up is Ms. Sylvia Ramos. Also, she's from the Coalition for Peace, Justice, and Dignity. And the Coalition Paz Dignidad. I hope I said that right. And she lost her son on September the 7th, 2003, at the hands of the San Diego Sheriff's Deputy. And I do believe that Ms. Tina's going to, or Mario's going to interpret.
Buenos días, mi nombre es Silvia Ramos y represento a la coalición Paz y Dignidad. Yo vengo representando a todas las mamás de los hijos que han matado. Yo soy una de ellas que también a mí me pasó un caso.
I'm here to represent all the mothers that have lost their sons to the sheriffs and this happened to me.
Este es mi hijo.
This is my son.
Le dieron 15 balazos.
They shot him 15 times.
Él ya estaba herido. Él se andaba cortando las venas.
He was trying to commit suicide.
Se andaba picoteando el pecho.
He was trying to stab himself in the chest.
Él estaba mal.
He was not right in the head.
Un vecino llamó al 911.
A neighbor called 911.
La policía, en vez de llegar a ayudarlo, porque él ya estaba herido, ya estaba todo desangrado, llegó aventando balazos.
The police, instead of coming and helping, coming to his aid, because he was already hurt, they came and with blazing guns and shot him down.
Y lo triste de todo que no pudimos hacer nada porque la gente tiene miedo de hablar, no tenemos testigos, no pudimos hacer nada.
And the sad thing about it is that we couldn't do anything about it because nobody wanted to come forward. They were afraid to testify against the police.
Por eso en esta organización nos estamos moviendo para que los otros crímenes no queden impunes.
That's why in this coalition we are moving forward, proceeding with the announcement of thesis so that these crimes do not go unheard.
Es cierto lo que dijo aquí el señor, que mucha gente, la gente no quiere hablar porque tiene miedo.
It's true what they've been saying, that the people do not want to speak because they are afraid.
Este otro muchacho también lo mató la policía.
This other young man was also killed by police.
A ellos los asustaron para que vendieran su casa y se fueran lejos.
They scared the witnesses so they would go to their house and wouldn't say anything.
A los otros hijos de la señora, del muchacho este que mataron, cada rato iban y le golpeaban los hijos, los amenazaban con pistola, los pateaban. Ella no tuvo nada más que hacer más que irse lejos.
The brothers that remain, his brothers that remain, were constantly being abused and threatened by police, and the mother had no choice but to move out of the state.
Por eso le estamos pidiendo que se unan a nosotros, que nos apoyen en nuestra causa.
That's why we are asking everybody to unite with the cause.
Yes, todo. Gracias. Thank you.
To field questions. If anyone has a question for any of our panelists, please feel free to ask them. Anybody at all? Okay, if not, we're going to take a short break and then come back and assemble our next panel. Thank you for being here at the start.